Welcome to The Church Planter's Life, a podcast exploring the possibilities and pain of starting a missional incarnational church. This podcast is a resource of the V3 movement. V3 is a grassroots training organization for men and women planters around the country. Thanks for tuning in as our host Matt Alexander leads the conversation.
Hey, welcome to the Planter's Life podcast. I'm Matt, and I'm talking today with Tim Owens in upstate New York about starting Missional Incarnational Expressions of the Church in his neck of the woods. This podcast is powered by the V3 Movement, which is a coaching and training organization that trains and coaches church planters to start Missional Incarnational Expressions of the Church. And so you can check out the v3movement.org to learn more. And we're going to be talking about one such story with Tim today. Tim, how goes it in your neck of the woods?
It goes well. We are in the middle of New York State in Albany. And so I'm looking at my window. We've had a bunch of snow. And now it's just ugly brown snow, and most of it has melted. So, but I'm going snowboarding this weekend, so it goes well.
Nice. I haven't seen snow in Miami in ever.
Yeah. We had a foot and a half maybe 2 weeks ago. It was fantastic. Love it.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit about Albany. Tell us about the context there, and specifically in as part of that, just kind of describe the city, describe the area, and share a little bit about kind of what led you to plant a community in that area, how that got going, how that dream got started. Why Albany?
So one of the things that I think is fun about our story is that when you say why Albany, it's the city that we live. My wife and I, friends and I, we didn't set out and say, hey, let's discern where the Spirit's moving or where is like a really cool place. We lived here, and we're not even from here. I'm originally from the South. I'm from Virginia. My wife's from Florida. She remembers having pool birthday parties in March, in Florida. Yeah. And up here, we're transplants. My wife's a beach girl. So but the point is, it's kind of insane. It's insane that we live here. It's insane in some sense that we are reimagining and trying a new expression of church. But we love it. I had a couple of different stops on my journey here. And so we landed here. I was working for a big church here in the area. It was a good church, a lot of good relationships. And my wife, Courtney, and I, and a handful of friends, basically were on this journey, and we felt like we felt there was more. We felt that the church should be more. I was on staff at this church, and we felt there was got to be more to what God called us to. And so that led a long journey for Courtney and I in particular. What do we do? Church as a job means, if you end up switching jobs. So I was applying in different churches. But through that journey, like we realize we have a love for our place. Albany's a funny place. A lot of our town is run by people who work for the state of New York. That's sort of like a big industry here. A lot of people say the favorite thing about Albany. You ask people here, hey, why do you like living here? They start saying, oh, it's great. You can get down to New York City in a couple hours, or quick drive to Boston. The Adriatic Mountains are local. You can drive and be in the mountains in a few hours. So you're like, wait, so you're saying the favorite thing about your town is that it's easy to leave? And so it's we're a blue collar town. I refer to our personal neighborhood where we live. I refer to it as Trumpville, for better or for worse. We're blue collar Italian Catholic town, a lot of pizza places, a lot of fire stations, a lot of auto mechanics. That's Albany. And no beach where Courtney grew up, And so we're in this church trying to discern where we should go. And this one, and we just felt like God was doing amazing things in Albany that we didn't want to miss. There is this one night I was reading to my kids from the Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. There's a story of Lucy going out into the woods one night. Lucy's the only one that can see the character Aslan in the Chronicles of Narnia. And so I'm reading the story to my kids about Lucy walking out, leaving the group behind one night in the dark. The whole book has been like filled with almost near Aslan sightings. And like the suspense is building the whole book. And finally this night in the reading, she walks out and she sees Aslan like face to face. And I remember, and through behind this, like Courtney and I are like constantly like agonizing, what should we do? What should we do? And I'm reading this story about finally Lucy coming face to face with Aslan. And my daughter, who at the time was maybe 5 or 6, and even still today, her body is too small for her emotions. She's always living out her emotions. She was literally on the couch next to me, jumping up and down, like, because she couldn't contain how excited she was. And like, I'm like a grown man, and I have a lot, and I was literally almost in tears. Like, my daughter's like freaking out. And because in that moment, like, I read that scene out loud, seeing our own experience in the church of, we were looking for something more, and we had all these sort of near God sightings with what we were doing. And we felt God saying, stay here. Like, I want you to stay here and be a part of what we're doing here. And like, that was what I remember reading that story, and my daughter freaking out, and me, like, grown man, almost crying with my kids. Because that was part of the step of the journey where we realized, I think God's calling us to stay here. Courtney, my Florida wife, was the first one to say out loud, I think I want to stay here forever. So we'd been applying to a few churches. None of them were local. And that led us to say, hey, I don't think there's not really a church around here who exists to be rooted in a place. Let's see if we can start one of those here. And that was a couple of years ago. That's been our journey.
So yeah, take us through it. So you're working at this larger church or more established church.
Yeah.
You decide that type of vocation is not the path for you, but you don't want to move. You want to root yourself deeper in your city, deeper in your neighborhood. So you find a different type of work. What was that like? What are you doing? And how does that take me through that time frame from stepping down from your vocational pastor life job to moving into a different type of work and then starting kind of a neighborhood, locally rooted faith community?
So I'm laughing here. Matt mentioned before we started, we're going to keep this to about 30 minutes.
Give me the highlights.
Yeah. And the questions he just asked, like those could dive into like, honestly, like a deep existential faith crisis for me. That takes way longer. But I'll kind of gloss it over, but I will say, like, you know, so he asked.
Here's why I just point out. I think this is important to hear stories like this, because, like, that's where sometimes the rubber meets the road for, like, starting more grassroots, raw, missional, incarnational type of initiatives is a lot of times people have a heart or dream for doing something that's an alternative to what they've seen. But the rubber meets the road around finances, family dynamics, around ego, oftentimes, right? That's attached to a title.
Brutal.
Or something.
Brutal.
So you don't have to get into all the needy dynamics, but I think we just need to hear how that works, you know, for people.
So this has been, okay, I didn't plan this, but I'm going to do another quick Chronicles of Narnia. I don't even read these books that often. But so there's another story. If you're familiar, a guy named Eustace gets transformed into a dragon. If you don't know the story, it's okay. Guy becomes a dragon, and then he has to literally have the scales torn off him, and it takes a long time. And literally, again, the character Aslan, who's basically God, literally digs his claws into this guy Eustace and like de-scales him, like one layer of scales at a time. And it's painful, and he's screaming. Like, honestly, that is the best metaphor for what this journey has been like for me. It has stripped me to the core in terms of my identity, I'll give a quick story. I was working at a large church, one of the largest churches in the area, where I would preach to a room of about 1,000 people at a time. I had a lot of influence, a lot of people that was my deal. And that made me pretty happy. I dug that. So I got a job, I went bivocational, as I went, friends and I decided to start a more missional rooted church community, and doesn't pay a lot of bills. So I got a job through some friends. I was working at a day hab for adults with developmental disabilities. And we would take the people we supported, Down syndrome, autism, that sort of thing. And it was pretty cool. We would volunteer in the community and do a lot of different things. I remember one moment, one of the places we volunteered at, we volunteered and our guys would provide janitorial support to a local church, a different one that I'd been at. So within literally a couple of weeks after leaving my giant megachurch, I was literally washing toilets with adults with developmental disabilities at another church. And the pastors of that church, who a couple of weeks before would have wanted to talk to me. These guys were still super nice. Those pastors were great, but it was more of the nod and smile as they went on about their church meetings. I just remember I was vacuuming. I remember vacuuming this carpet thinking, what the hell am I doing? And that's one tiny story. And that was I spent a couple years asking that question, redefining my understanding of ministry and the role of the pastor, and switching from identifying my measuring my faithfulness, switching from measuring faithfulness from how I prepared my sermon to how well I know my neighbors. I laugh because these are a lot of these questions really cut to the deep of this hard journey I've been on. We don't have time in 30 minutes, but it's like you said, it's where the rubber meets the road. Courtney and I, my wife and I, our friends and I, we felt called to do something more. And we had to decide, are we going to bet the farm on this? Are we going to change jobs, give up our finances, give up our influence? And there's been a lot of things along the way where we had to, and then the questions become, are we going to quit? Because it's hard. And do we really believe in this kind of church? And doing it this way, I could go back. I could go get another job. I could go back to the big church scene. And we keep saying, we keep doubling down, saying, "No, this is where we want to be. This is how we want to do it."
That's great. Thanks for indulging my curiosity a little bit with that. Describe a little bit of the rhythms that your community has right now. When do you gather? What is gathering and scattering looking like right now? And specifically, what does discipleship look like in this season of your church plan? How do you guys kind of understand that? How do you get at that right now in this season?
Oh, man. It's a good question. And these are good, some of these questions I feel like I have good answers for. Some of them you feel like they're a bit of the pop quiz. Even though that nervous feeling, even though these are what every pastor should be asking and answering every day. All right, so one of the things that we feel that we are kind of called to do and we are passionate about is reimagining how we gather. Quick 30-second aside. That's been a whole journey for us too, is figuring out what it means. I'm going to come back to how we gather, but just quick little thing. Yeah. We've come out of a context where the only imagination people have for church is that Sunday gathering. Everyone here imagines church as a Sunday gathering, whether they're at the mega church we are at, whether they're, Catholic who still goes to mass or, hasn't been to mass since confirmation, or whether they go to a small, mainline denominational church. As we seek to reimagine how we gather, a lot of times we're asking questions or providing answers to questions, honestly, a lot of people aren't even asking. And so we still feel called to press into it because we believe there's more. We went through a bit of a season, maybe a bit of a pendulum swing, where we were like, we don't have to gather at all. I guess, you know, and I, you know, it may have been a bit of a pendulum swing, but I think it was a necessary one for us. We've kind of come back to the middle where we really believe in the importance of gathering once a week. But we try to reimagine it. So where we've landed for now, we can't take credit for it. I've copied a bit from what Dan White and Axiom has done in Syracuse. They're not too far from us. So we gather either for is the closest thing we have to a traditional worship service. Right now, there's about 5 or 6 families that meet in my home. We all cram into my home. We change it a bit because it's as highly participatory as we can possibly make it. We want everything to be participatory. So I'll lead the discussion, or one of the others will lead a discussion. We have other ways of everyone kind of takes roles, and we formed our own form of liturgy, and everyone has a role in that. We'll do that one, you know, a couple of times a month. We'll also gather for what we call a renewal project. Our church is called Renew, so we have renewal projects, and that's serving somewhere in our community. Last month we made meal bags for a local school program that sends kids that get sponsored lunches at school. They get a backpack full of food on the weekend. We help put those together. We've partnered with so many different area nonprofits and a lot of people who are Christians, a lot of people who aren't. It's been fantastic. A great way to dive into our community. Or we also believe in kind of cultivating our own community, and so we have a party or a brunch. We honestly do that about once a month. I constantly find myself saying, this is church too. I'll do one quick story. And I'm constantly second guessing myself, you know, can we break the rules this much? Is this working? Is this discipleship? I'm going to get to your discipleship question.
Yeah.
I had my family was in town over Christmas for church service the Sunday before Christmas. We did one of our renewal projects. My son was describing to his cousin what we were doing that Sunday morning, and it wasn't going to a church building at all. And I remember, my nephew said, "Well, that's not church." He wasn't describing going to a church building. And my son, you know, we don't want to coach our kids, but they're part of this journey with us. And my son, I heard my son say to his cousin, he goes, "Yeah, this church is about helping people." You know, and as much as I wonder, like, are we, you know, I have all these doubts, can we do this? And part of me even wonders, are we creating a church that my kids will be freaks? You know, at some point they'll recognize what we're doing is weird, my friend, you know. Sure. And I want to sort of steward that as well. But in that moment, you know, to have my son off the cuff say, "Oh no, church is helping people," I thought, okay. You know, he doesn't know the word incarnational, but that's, he's getting somewhere.
Yeah.
So discipleship, you know, this has been an interesting thing for us. We've found that reimagining our rhythms has discipled all of us. We had a conversation a while back where we recognized, I'm living my life differently because of all these different things. All of us are more engaged in our communities. I could go with a lot of examples. But we also have recognized, so that's kind of sort of the implicit discipleship. We've recognized we don't have great answers for like intentional explicit discipleship. Mm-hmm. We don't have a discipleship process. We don't have we don't have like a mentorship program. We're a small faith community, and so some of that doesn't have to be, but we've definitely said, hey, we have a lot of really good implicit means of discipleship going. One of the things we've been talking about and identifying is we can probably make this a little more intentional. You know, a word for that is formal, but no one likes the word formal. But there's value in having some structure. So, that's an area where I feel like the pop quiz, if I was a better pastor, I'd have a better answer.
No, it's all good, man. Thanks for sharing about what you guys are up to. So here's another question. So share, and it can be in the form of a story or just where in the midst of this journey, where do you feel like you've experienced a lot of joy? Where has there been a lot of pain? Kind of the beauty the beauty and the pain all wrapped up together. Share if you were to hold on to one thing of planting, leading, pastoring, following Jesus in this type of way, where is a spring of joy for you, and where has there been a source of pain or struggle?
I think maybe it's the same. Okay. Our church is called Renew. We felt that we all need a renewed understanding. Actually, we kind of stumbled on the name in Miami. It's a fun story, at one of the V3 cohorts, but that's a different, it's a fun, but yeah, so it's a connection to you. And so Renew was really born. Our community gave birth to Renew one night in my backyard around a fire, as we invited a bunch of people together saying, I'm thinking of taking the step out from the church I was at. Would you join me? I asked everyone to go around and kind of say, why are you, we all know what the question is and what we're talking about. Why are you here? What draws you to this fire pit on this night to consider this step in the journey? And we all gave a bunch of answers, but all those answers were within the category of, I'm tired of just going to church. I want to be in a faith community where we are the church. You know, Renew exists to be the church. So I think that our greatest joys and our greatest frustrations, and like we've had some knockdown fights, man, have been on that, right? Because everyone, we all resonate with we want to be the church. And there's a lot of safety in that, because that ignites all of our passions, but it's vague. And so I think my greatest joys have been where, like, we've done it. Mm-hmm. Where we as a community, especially when it comes to being the church as a community, like, there are so many ways where we have entered into each other's lives, and we have held each other up through hard times, and we've had some of the best parties. There's been some where we literally have functioned as the church. I have moments where my kids, look across the room and are in a conversation being discipled by my friends in a way that's more meaningful than I can do. So there's all, you know, there's been opportunities we've had to do things in our neighborhoods and our community that people kind of pause and come up to us and say, I don't know what you're doing as a church, but that was pretty cool, you know. Mm. So there's been times where a lot of different points where I step back sometimes even in the moment and say, this is it. When I say I want to be the church, this is what I want to do. I want to have these kinds of relationships. I want to define what we do as a church by the actions we take to be present in the neighborhood. So those are the greatest joys. Some of the greatest frustrations are the flip side of that. We all want to be the church. But like when that gets down to the granular nitty gritty, we have different ideas of what that means. And that's super frustrating. And so I carry all these assumptions. Well, of course, if we want to be the church, it's going to mean these six things. How in the world can you not see that? You know? And so I honestly think some of the biggest frustrations has been when we had different visions and navigating how we play those visions out. We've been committed from the beginning to finding out how to have a form of shared leadership, and which means we go slow, and means at times I lead real poorly because I don't take charge, and other times I lead poorly because I do take charge. So shared leadership, when we have dissimilar visions, is frustrating. I think our greatest joys and our greatest frustrations have stemmed around when we nail it in unison of what it means for us to be the church, and we experience that, it is the best. And there's a lot of trial, you know, a lot of failure along the way too.
Yeah. Very cool. What do you wish you knew when you got started that you know now?
I've often said, I told everyone I was planning a church, and I wish I hadn't said that. Planning a church is automatically creates such a dynamic, an expectation. And so I navigated from the outset everyone asking, when was I going to launch? People within our congregation, when are we going to launch our public service? All my friends outside of the, who weren't part of the church, but were still loved me and cheered for me and obviously saw I was failing because I wasn't launching, you know. I wish I'd begun by saying, hey, I'm stepping down from where I am now. I'm going to get another job. And I want to spend a year or maybe longer discerning what else we can do to be the church here in this area in Albany, in our neighborhood called Colony. And I wish I'd told the friends that were part of that journey, I'm going to spend a year praying and experimenting and trialing and erring. And I'd love for you to be part of that with me. And if at the end of a year or 2 years, we have something that we think can pull people together and launch people out as a movement that actually calls people to be the church as a shared way of life. You know, if we end with something that works, then we'll do it. And then we'll be a church. I wish I'd invited people to a season of prayer and experimentation as opposed to saying, I'm planting a church. Because it created such a different expectation set. And it created so much pressure, maybe even mostly in me. Because I don't mean to say I had a clear vision and that everyone else has to be brought along. I was at the very beginning sort of thinking along the lines of when was our launch service going to be too. Like my whole paradigm has been so radically altered through this. I wish I started without saying I'm going to plant a church. It would have made the first couple years smoother.
Yeah, very cool. Hey, if someone, we're going to kind of wrap up our time, but if someone wants to stay connected with you and the community and what you guys are up to, how could they do that online, through Twitter, a website, Instagram-y, stuff like that?
You can find us on, I'm laughing right now because, man, I had a moment earlier where we didn't know V3's website, and I don't know my website. I'm going to pull this up while we're talking here. I should have had that up. Oh my goodness. I don't know. You can find Google Renew Colony Albany. Maybe we can throw some comments in the link when we put this up.
What's your Twitter? Let me see if I can find it.
Real Tim Owens.
Real Tim.
My friend Corey, who does our website, is going to be so mad at us right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now.
Renew Colony.
Yep. I think that's in the website somewhere. This is so embarrassing. I was feeling so good until this moment. Yeah, we'll put this in the link.
We will. Yes.
Yeah.
I found the, okay. I think I got it. Okay. The website is Renew Colony, and that's Colony Colonie.
Yep.
.church.
That sounds good.
Renew Colony .church.
Renew Colony. We are our place. We talk a lot about, you know, loving the people in our place. Our place is Colony. It's sort of a suburb, so to speak, of Albany. Yeah. We never dived into the fun of figuring out how to do a missional church in a suburb as opposed to a more of an inner city context, or urban context. But that's for next time.
That's for next time. That's for part two.
That's right.
Well, thanks for hanging out with us today, Tim. It's good stuff.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We hope you discovered something meaningful in this podcast for your church planting journey. To connect with our training, tribe, and tools, go to thev3movement.org.